You're listening to Revenue Vitals with Chris Walker.
Chris Walker, welcome. Appreciate your time. You are obviously a big deal in the B2B sales and sales enablement space. What I'm really interested in is understanding how you engage with your customers, how you teach them about the data that they need to capture in order to help you make them successful. And I'd like to dig in first into how you actually got into this space. You know, you started out in engineering, as I understand it. So it seems like an unlikely direction for someone who starts out as a hopeful engineer.
Yeah, Sam, happy to be here. First off, it's booming in Austin, Texas, South by Southwest. Just finished up. I'm fired up for this show. So yeah, let's get into it. I'll cover it at a high level. I studied engineering in college. I think moved toward engineering, one, because I was good at STEM, but also because society told you, like, go get a good degree that has a high starting salary. And so I think that I was influenced a lot by like societal norms at that point. My engineering degree ended up paying off a lot, and I'm really happy that I did it, but I just like explaining that to people. I spent the first 5 years of my career basically acting as a consultant inside of different subsidiaries of a large British-based holdings company called Halma. And then around 2017, I basically started to recognize something inside of the sales and marketing engine inside of B2B companies that most executives didn't see yet, which was that marketing was actually the biggest issue inside of their company, for a mature growth stage company, that in terms of scaling their business and scaling their go-to-market engine, that marketing was actually the issue. But most executives in 2017 did not see it that way. They thought they needed to hire Sandler sales training and spend $3 million a year to train all their reps. They thought they needed 10 more SDRs to get meetings. They thought they needed a chief revenue officer and to fire their VP of sales or VP of marketing and roll it all under a chief revenue officer. And it took them another 3 to 5 years. And now at this point, it's pretty commonly accepted that you need a demand-oriented engine to augment the entire performance of your go-to-market and your sales team. And if you don't have that, then your sales team's just going to be highly unproductive with your market not understanding who you are, not interested in buying, not being the top vendor, and things like that. And then over the past couple years, I've had a similar sort of revelation that I did in 2017 about marketing and B2B, that actually I think the biggest issue inside of B2B companies right now is actually go-to-market data and analytics. And I think I'm back at the same point where most executives do not recognize and see the problem in their business yet, though I've seen it consulting with over 50 companies in the past 9 months. And it'll take a couple of years for people to see it. But the reality is that a mature, developed, like growth-oriented B2B company has a great product. They have tons of happy customers. They have esteemed investors. They have brilliant leaders and people. And so if they have all these things in place, then why is the average revenue leader or go-to-market leader tenure less than 2 years? CMOs and CROs both have average tenures less than 2 years. Why are less than 40% of sales reps hitting quota? Why are total CAC paybacks greater than 36 or 48 months in most private companies? And the reality is it's because the executives in the company do not have the right data to make what should be fast, easy, obvious decisions that we can get aligned on. And instead, because of the lack of data, those decisions that should be fast and easy and obvious become slow and hard. It becomes very difficult to get people aligned. A decision that you should have made 12 months ago, you sit on that decision for 12 months because you don't have confidence in the data to get you to actually move on it. And it leaves B2B go-to-market teams effectively stuck in this like traditional playbook that appeases the like 2012-oriented way that we measure and optimize our go-to-market engine. And it's just time for a change. Layering on more technology isn't going to do it. And adopting an ABM platform, while has some benefits, doesn't actually solve the root issue, which is that we need the data to be able to make decisions around how we spend millions or tens of millions of dollars a year on people and programs and investments and technology. And in my experience thus far with many companies, I've seen the pattern over and over that companies just do not have the data to make those decisions very easily.
Understood.
And so, yeah, that's kind of how my career has progressed. And it's interesting for your podcast, given the data orientation and focus.
Absolutely. And I guess, you know, as part of your role, when you're speaking to your clients, part of that exercise is acceleration, right? That's the goal is to help accelerate success, I would assume. But in that process, what are the things that you find are most successful in order to accelerate them towards it? Is it accelerating them towards identifying the right data identifying the right points of data. You know, there's a lot of different ways to measure success in terms of CAC. There's lots of different ways to measure touch points and signals. And many of those signals are not accessible through digital touch points, right? Word of mouth, far more important than any digital touch point you're going to find on the LinkedIn Navigator. So what are the aspects of that acceleration that really, really help to harness what you do?
Yeah. So first off, it's really important to define what success means. And to us, success means efficiency, which means driving consistent improvements in the return on investment that you deploy and go to market, and then effectiveness, driving consistent growth in pipeline and revenue, regardless of market conditions, because you have a product that people need and they all know that they need it at some point. And so when you think about success in that orientation, instead of we need more MQLs or we need more meetings for our sales team, and you really align on the metrics that matter that should be measured across quarters and half years and total years in terms of real progress, that the core ways that we like help companies deliver success, first off, is that companies typically look at a lead-based sort of process inside of their CRM when they think about their sales team. And they measure it purely based on the account fit. So when I ask companies, like, how do you optimize your go-to-market or how do you optimize your investments? It's all around, well, this industry or this vertical or this type, you know, this company size or revenue range. And most companies do not have a process. I would say 90 to 95% of companies do not have a process to consistently measure the signals that those accounts are sending you. And we actually need both things. If you call your best fit account and they have no intent to buy and you have your best rep follow up with them, your odds of success are still very, very, very low. And if you have an account that's a medium fit that asks for a demo request or has a qualified, you know, decision maker coming and saying they want to buy, that intent signal matters a ton. And I would argue that it matters as much, if not more, than the fit and the talent of the sales rep or the SDR and things like that. And so the first thing that we do is reverse engineer the company's data to try and isolate the signals. And we can typically get 40 to 60% accuracy in the data that they have right there, which finds clear, obvious things of, hey, we're wasting $5.4 million in Google ads, which was a real story that we uncovered about 2 weeks ago with a company that spends $14 million a year on Google ads. We found $5.4 million that gets spent on ads that have more than a 60-month CAC payback period just on the advertising spend. Cut immediately, improve marketing ROI by 25%, lower CAC payback period by 5 months with just cutting a very low ROI marketing investment. That's a huge win. And then you can decide whether you keep that $5.4 million and you throw it on the bottom line, or you go and deploy that in other go-to-market investments and product and anything else that you want to do. But you can't do that when you're just wasting a ton of money on Google ads. The next thing that we do is we actually audit, assess, and score all of their data quality. So which fields are manually set that should be automatically set? Which fields should be set always and are only set 30% of the time? Which data points are you not even collecting, which there are many? Which things are collected on the lead object, but should actually be collected on a custom object or an opportunity object or on the account object so the data is in the wrong place? We audit and analyze how they report and what KPIs they measure and things like that, which then develops a roadmap of here are the steps that you need to take that are very clear on how you go from having not the right data so that decisions are hard, so that in the future you have all the data that you need so these types of decisions are easy. And those end up being the two core main value points, finding quick wins in terms of efficiencies, ROI, things like that, as well as building a roadmap in terms of how do we actually get all the data that we need in the right place, in the right reports, so that we can, in the right views, so that we can make these decisions. And then consistently optimize. And what you find is as you start making the right data-driven choices, the results compound. You've made one, now you have that money back, then you go and do three other things and you learn things, then that compounds and you make another good decision. And very quickly, you can separate yourself from your competitive set in terms of go-to-market performance over a period of, you know, 6 to 24 months just by having several like data-driven choices compound on one another.
Right. And there's one point there that's really interesting, right? Which is that bad data in means bad inputs mean bad outputs, right? So you end up having results which don't match up to, you know, what your expectations are. So you have assumptions and expectations, but when you're engaging with businesses, especially, I'm sure, you know, not all of them are, the companies you engage in are necessarily that young. Some of them are a bit older. I'm going to ask, is it a broad spectrum or is it largely SaaS? Is it on the B2B spectrum?
All over. Financial services, medical device companies have been a great customer of ours.
Oh, wow.
We're spending more time in manufacturing and industrial. And I love working with those industries.
Yeah. So on that basis, I mean, how do you decouple people from their assumptions and expectations? Because data is both your friend and foe in this role, right? Because a lot of people are in there proving things, and you have to go in there and kind of challenge these assumptions and challenge the and then also set the right expectations based upon those assumptions.
Yeah, it's weird though, because like most people already know what we tell them. They just anecdotally and like logically and just using common sense, but they haven't been able to put the data in the way to present it to the rest of the company to be able to get everyone aligned to make a decision. And so what we do is we help people put the data in the way to show the story that they already know is true that they haven't been able to communicate because they're still looking at multi-touch attribution and W-shaped reports and just reporting on the opportunity object or the fit and not the entire what we call a signal architecture, signal lifecycle. Sure, we find a bunch of things that they had no idea existed. Hey, you know, your demo conversion rate should be 5x better. You could get 4 or 5x more pipeline just by fixing this process without adding any money. And some things they don't even know are happening until you look at the data in that granular way. Other things, they're like, yeah, we've been sitting on that decision for fucking 18 months. We've been talking about this and haven't moved on it because we can't get aligned as a company. But now that you've been able to present it in this way and show it to our VP of sales, now we're all good. Now we can move and let's go.
Interesting.
Yeah, those are sort of, it's two different things. There's uncovering things that they don't necessarily see because of how we look at the data, but there's also just being able to present the data in a way that makes sense to get people aligned and start moving.
Understood. I guess, you know, because I'm thinking you're talking about the era of kind of pre-2016, 2017 to kind of post-2016, 2017. And we in that, you know, and who in that high growth phase, and I'm certainly guilty of being one of them, of, you know, having access to lots of free debt to raise money and just growing for growth's sake. I've been in those organizations and we always, you know, firmly believed in the product-led growth, blitzscaling kind of notion of how you build a company, and you worry about the things that actually build a strong and stable business later, such as churn, right? So often the architecture of an organization is built around the data that they believe that they have, the information that they've based it upon. I wonder how you deal with corporations. Do you have to deal with them on kind of 1, 2, 5 year basis? Is there like a long period of evolution that you're seeing in this time as people are adopting more data and adopting better data? Is it simple, hard, long, short? I'm just trying to understand your process.
One of the core strategies that I have in all of my entrepreneurial endeavors is that I never try to sell to people that don't want to be convinced. Like there's 99% of the market out there that doesn't recognize this, doesn't think that it's important yet, will figure it out in 3 to 5 years. And that's great. But I'll spend my time educating the people that have already had success with a bunch of my ideas over the past 5 years, trust in the insights and opinions that I have, will then move on those. People have made their careers and things like that over some of the things that I've uncovered. And people will follow that. And so I'm not convincing people that don't want to change. It's really a quote unquote marketing strategy to educate people for the people that see that type of opportunity or issue inside of their business to then be educated when we actually have a conversation about how we do it. So I think that's one core point. And then my core belief is that B2B companies should have something like this moving forward, as in holistic go-to-market analytics across your whole thing, as well as a third party that like executive leader that can be able to come in and advise on the data that they see across lots of different companies, which then provides benchmarking and faster insights and validation of decisions and things like that. Companies have used a Gartner or something like that in the past where some, you know, washed up person with a pocket protector gives you some advice about the things they did 15 years ago in practice. They don't look at your business data. They don't have core ways to analyze it. Their benchmarks are very broad. It's very enterprise, like big company oriented. And a lot of the stuff that comes out for growth stage companies between, you know, anything mid-market, 25 million, even up to like 250, 300 million in revenue just usually doesn't apply and breaks down in practice for that type of company. And I think that there's a space in the market for us to provide that type of thing. And I continue to see, as I've done this with companies for a long time, that companies that are partnered with us for a long time make consecutive, strong, important decisions in the right way, which then create compounding gains. My first one was with a company called Vena Solutions. We started working together in early 2020, and they were a customer for 4 years. And over that time, they increased sales velocity by more than 1,200%. In the first year, it was 739%. And that means ACV went up, sales cycle went down, pipeline went up, win rate went up, and just creating tons of efficiency inside of the go-to-market, one led by an incredible CMO, Allison Monroe, but also optimizing against the right KPIs, investing in your marketing in the right ways that are effective, focusing on the right types of signals that drive high sales productivity and sales velocity, and ignoring and stop investing in creating a lot of low quality signals. And then as you start doing that, then all of a sudden, instead of just running your ebook campaign on LinkedIn, 2 years later, you have 9 advertising channels running, all with specific purposes across the customer lifecycle that all have measurable, tangible ROI. And that changes how your outbound strategy works. It makes your event strategy work better. It starts having your partner channel work better just by optimizing how you invest in your marketing engine, which in reality, it's investing properly in the demand creation phase of the customer lifecycle, where B2B companies typically spend all their money between intent capture and closed won. We need to have an investment and a motion to get our target customers in market to buy in a cost-effective way. And so I do think that there's benefits of working with a firm like ours for a long period of time, but companies also will come in and use us for 8 weeks and get some of the things that they need, and then come back 6 months later when they want an analysis. And we're still working and finalizing the business model on what is the right frequency and what's the right cadence of us to deliver this type of stuff for companies. Right now, quarterly seems like a really good thing because the data in quarters actually gives you enough to see patterns and have enough time scale to actually like make good decisions. I think that companies that try to optimize or make decisions weekly and monthly, I think make a lot of poor decisions based on not enough data. But yeah, those are some of the ways that we help.
And what's your advice to those businesses, businesses, there's people that are going to be watching this, who are going to be interested in this, obviously across the board where you're marketing yourself. What advice do you give someone as they start looking at what you're doing and thinking they want to engage with you, but they're not sure if they're quite ready?
I think the people listening know whether they're ready or not. The thing that you know whether you're ready is whether when you're making decisions of how to allocate millions or tens of millions of dollars, that you have high confidence that those investments are going to return an appropriate ROI. And if you don't have that, then oftentimes it's because you do not have the right data to be able to see the insights that allow you to make those types of decisions. Almost every dollar in a B2B sales and marketing engine is spent on people, technology, and programs to create and capture signals. Most of the marketing dollars are spent to create signals, and then they have other tools and technology that deliver signals as well. And all of that stuff should easily be measured on spend money, create a signal, drive a sales action, measure the outcome, and do that a million, tens of millions of times over for a big company over a year or 6 months, and then look at the patterns of all the signals that suck and stop spending money and stop spending resources to follow up and take action against signals that don't produce results. It feels so straightforward. It's crazy for me because I've been doing this for a long time. And now presented this way, it's like, wow, like that's really easy. Sure, we can't measure our podcast that way. Sure, we're not going to be able to measure our brand awareness ads on LinkedIn. We might have certain events that are used to create content and drive thought leadership, and maybe we shouldn't measure that way. But damn, most of the money we spend can be measured as simply as this. And when you think about it as signals, not as MQLs and outbound and inbound, you see as a go-to-market team that you invest money to create signals, you invest money to act on those signals, and then from there, you either create pipeline or you don't. And therefore, the signals combined with the account fit or account segment will clearly tell you what signals work for what types of accounts. And you could say that in the UK, for our enterprise segment, these are the signals that we want. And in our North America for like mid-market or velocity sale, these are the signals that we want to push. And therefore, these are the investments that we're going to make. And it becomes a very clear way about how to deploy a majority of the money that gets spent in marketing today in a highly different way based on data.
Sure. And, obviously, when you're looking at large-scale spend, you mentioned Google ad spend or Google search spend in the tens or 15s of millions. What are the things that surprise you most in those situations that people miss or not paying attention to?
That companies have had measurably terrible untenable ROI on those channels for years and haven't done anything about it. That even the reports that they put together that show that they get $2 in pipeline for every dollar they spend on Google ads, and they win that pipeline at 12%, which means that they're getting a 4 to 6 year CAC payback just on the advertising spend. And then you add in SDRs, marketing headcount, sales headcount. For some of these keywords, we're talking that it's costing us 10 years to pay back the cost just to get the customer.
Yeah, right.
And I think also that a lot of companies don't like just do the basic math on the cost per click to know, okay, we sell a $4,000 a year solution. We cannot pay $50 a click. We can't even pay $25 or $12 a click with how bad the conversion rates, not only from ad to lead or signal, but also from signal to closed one, are so bad. And that the entire investment in Google Ads gets propped up by branded terms where the ad didn't really even do that much, but takes credit for it. And even the branded terms deliver 12-month CAC payback on the advertising spend. So we're talking 36 months total CAC to get a customer on a branded Google ad. And so the entire way that companies spend the money there, and then the fact that they spend so much money there and don't spend the attention to scrutinize it properly, even though they have all the data. That's what's surprising to me. I used to think, oh, companies just are lazy and they don't collect the data, so they don't know. But the reality is most companies collect the data, but they don't know any other way to deploy $15 million a year. So they just keep doing it on Google with measurably low ROI. And the reality is that it's, for most companies, it's not cut Google completely, but we typically are recommending somewhere between a 60 and 80% cut in the Google ad spend that happens staged out, especially for that type of spend. At lower spends, you can do that more quickly, but at $15 million a year, you want to stage that out over 6, potentially even 12 months. And so, yeah, those are some things that have surprised me specifically on Google. And then you could almost tell the exact same story with LinkedIn lead gen ads, content syndication, and a variety of other things that B2B companies spend a lot of money on to create low-quality signals. So, yeah, that's been surprising to me.
At Google, actually, we did a test with a very large customer. They did a test with us where they actually switched off search altogether for half the country. This test was being run in, and the effect was virtually nothing.
That's crazy.
Had zero impact on their actual outcomes. But okay, so obviously there's all these aspects, and Google search is one aspect, and that's the big elephant in the room. Do you find that there is a typical platforms that are under-leveraged and data points that companies are not using internally that are should be obvious, but they're just not touching on?
I mean, from a data perspective, the reality is that companies just don't measure signals holistically. The sales team does random stuff because of signals. They're inside of some tool saying, oh, this account was on some other company's website. Let's go find 5 random people at IBM and then try and call them and like search for a diamond in the rough. So companies are used to using signals, but they do not measure the impact of the signal all the way to pipeline and revenue. And that creates the gap where they see there's a bunch of activity that they measure all those people on, but they can't optimize or look at the data to determine what should these people do and what shouldn't they? How much headcount do we actually need? Where are we wasting a ton of money on marketing or data to be able to have our sales team do things that are unproductive? It's the lack that fit and intent matter. And then if intent matters, we need to be able to track signals to revenue, just like we do account segments and industries and things like that. So not having the signal data is one big thing. Now, when we think about things that are like under-leveraged or things like that, I actually believe that it's more about how the things are used than whether you use them or not. Almost every company should be using LinkedIn ads. You can get to every single executive that matters to you. It works for so many different things. You can target by job title and granularities that you just can't get any other way. But if you just use it for your shitty ebook to try and get people to download the lead form and say, woo, we got $150 cost per lead, or we got someone to sign up for our virtual event for $200, and that's what success is measured on, then it's really about how you use the channel. Or you could say, okay, we're just going to focus on the accounts that are in pipeline beyond stage 2, and we're going to market to the buying group and all the executives inside of those companies to increase sales velocity. And if we just focus there, we don't need to spend $100,000 on lead gen ads for LinkedIn. We can spend $2,000 a month and get a great return on the investment there by focusing the investment and using it in the right way. And so I think that if we want to talk about things that are under-leveraged overall, It's really about what signals are you trying to create, and then working backward to what are the things that we can do that then influence customers to take those types of actions and create those signals. And so having like a recurring type of event, I've talked about this for 5 years, and really the strategy hasn't changed that much. You need an organic thought leadership strategy that drives the market forward and communicates and exudes your expertise and perspective on the market. That's a live event, a podcast, a long form video show, content for at least LinkedIn and potentially other social networks that your customers use. One thing, 2 to 3 people, do it in the right way. It's actually a very low cost investment and a very high ROI and high effectiveness investment at using advertising channels in the way that they should be used. So using things that are like quote unquote awareness channels where customers are not demonstrating clear intent to buy your product or something like that, that you use those channels in a different way to get the accounts that are not in market to buy or are not thinking about your solution, aware of the problem, aware of the solution that exists, aware of your company and where you see the world going, and using paid media dollars to get those accounts to understand about your company, not to collect a lead. Those end up being two core things. I think that companies are under leveraging AI when it comes to, this is a new thing, so it's not like everyone's so far behind, but I think using AI to follow up with signals and follow up with people and accounts inside of signals will be a frontier, simply because the like human capital investment in that function to do incredibly robotic work most of the time is starting to go under a lot of pressure. And the hyper segmentation inside of go-to-market teams, where we have so many investments in marketing headcount, and then we segment to SDRs, and maybe we have MDRs, and maybe we have 8 junior AEs, and then we have CS managers, and then we have an account manager, that it's just too expensive to run a go-to-market with all of these specialized functions for many companies today, where the math worked in the boom times of 2018, 2020, 2022, but not working anymore. And I struggle to see where the market ever gets back to where it was in 2021. It was hyperinflated. I just don't think we're going to see revenue multiples and levels of investment in that way ever again. And that's going to put long-standing, potentially forever change about how we have to structure and invest in our go-to-market teams to drive an appropriate ROI.
Sure, I agree. And I think, you know, I mean, AI, you say people aren't necessarily behind at this stage, it's too early, but velocity is really key, right? When you're thinking about utilization of LLMs, generative AI, and back-end LLMs, you know, customized LLMs where you can actually feed in data, a lot of those roles that you're talking about, especially SDRs and very early stage kind of lead gen people, do you see a future for that part of the organization in relation to human capital?
I think things just take a lot longer to play out than people think. And so, yeah, while it feels like an obvious thing right now, there are legal concerns, there are intellectual property and trademark concerns, there are privacy concerns. And so, sure, there's going to be some like upstarts that try and growth hack their way, and some of them will be successful, just like every other growth hack that's existed for years. A handful of people really work on it, while all the other companies come up with some type of excuse about why not to use it that's typically legal related. And it'll take, I think, a very long time for that to actually play out in practice inside of a B2B company. Well, and so, yeah, that's sort of how I see it. I think that some people will move on it, but generally, I just have been in B2B for long enough now to know that nothing happens as fast as you think it's going to happen for whatever reason. Maybe that's part of the issue, but it's generally like a very, and even I would say B2C the same way. B2C companies tend to do more sexy things. Like they'll jump on TikTok, they'll do more sexy things, but the same underlying fundamental issues about how they set up their, you know, internal MMMs and marketing mix modeling, how they try and run attribution in an omni-channel sort of way, and how that determines how they deploy investment specifically on digital, but also activations and field and things like that. There's actually a lot of the same core issues. B2C companies just tend to move on sexy things faster, but both tend to be very slow moving.
So on that, what would you advise people to in the B2B marketplace to be looking at in relation to AI? Because you're right, they are more risk averse and they tend to play less with new technology. But sales acceleration is an area and has always been an enormous area of growth and investment, particularly in venture capital. One, because you had large scale strategics such as Salesforce and so on, who pumped lots of money into new things that they would ultimately end up acquiring. So what are the areas that you think AI can really help enhance the sales process and data capture and sales enablement today?
Yeah, I mean, how about this? How about before we go and buy another tool or we think about some big project in AI, we spend 2 months going out into the market, talking to all of our dream customers and all the customers that don't pay us yet, understand how they want to buy, understand the source of information that they trust, understand all the things that we do that they do not like, understand all the things that our competitors do that they do not like, and then design a process and customer experience that matches what our customer wants. And then we can figure out how we use technology to be able to do that rather than just force fitting technology into a broken, shitty process that exists today. To me, that's what's missing. Companies tend to always go to technology. We need to be way more customer centric. We need to design processes around the customer, not design our customers' processes around the technology that we've purchased. And I think we just have it a lot in reverse, especially when it comes to B2B, which leads to the bloated tech stack that most companies have, where they have so many tools and are like highly ineffective, don't use most of them. The tools then create constraints around where you can advertise, what you can measure, what you can do. And then so all of a sudden, all the things that you could do in marketing or as an SDR or things like that then get constrained to just the things that those tools can do and measure. It over time creates a ton of bloat. I don't know what else to call it. And now we have to figure out how to unwind that. Companies are, you know, ripping apart their tech stack, trying to consolidate, trying to lower costs, trying to find. Most companies will have like 5 to 10 different data providers at this point. A lot of them don't match up. So there's just like there's a lot of them, and companies spend tons of money on advertising and other types of programs. And there's just so many efficiency opportunities sitting right in front of us. So yeah, like I've had that when any technology comes, I have that position all along. Go and figure out what your customer wants, prove out that it works manually, and then see if there's available technology that can make what already is working manually work better and just not jumping straight to the tech.
Sure. So, I mean, in summary, some of the things that you've covered is essentially get the basics down first, right? The basic aspects of who is your customer, what do they want, right? Set out your goal.
And it's different. Like the basics aren't so basic. Like companies spend a lot of time on product marketing and market research to figure out what product they should build and how they should price it and things like that. But there's this huge thing about how does our customer want to buy that is not covered in market research, is not covered by product marketing. Demand gen and field do not talk to customers at that level or to try and get those types of insights. And so when we think about how much money we deploy to have customers flow through our customer experience, but then not take the time to really understand what does our customer want in that experience, to me, that's it. Because I don't think that people really see the distinction. They're like, yeah, we do product marketing. Yeah, we do focus groups. We have a customer advisory board. But all the questions are geared toward product and product marketing, not in terms of customer experience. And I think even customers that'll run like a brand survey, they run like a brand survey as a surrogate to measure like the top of the funnel, quote unquote, but they ask no questions that relate to it. It's like, what feature is most important to you? And like, they don't ask questions that are related to the actual go-to-market engine. So I think there's a huge gap in data when it comes to what does our customer want? Who do they trust? Where'd they hear about us? What types of our, you know, content do they actually like? What do they care about? I think there's a lot of opportunities there that are mostly determined through assumptions at this point, if I'm being honest. They'll make a buyer persona, and then they'll make assumptions and interpret what that person needs without actually asking enough people to know. Between the CRM performance data in terms of effectiveness and efficiency combined with the customer insights about how to run your go-to-market, I think if you just did those two things, you would have a fundamentally different approach to how you run and scale your sales and marketing engine.
Start at the beginning is what you're saying. And what I mean by that
in some
is
ways,
actually,
yeah.
So actually, what again, I'm just trying to distill some pieces of advice that you've given here, which is start at the beginning and understand how they actually want to engage with you first, right? Where and how. Let them determine that.
Yeah, but it's not really first. Like most companies have an existing machine. And as they build that machine, then there creates constraints around how hard it is to then change how that machine works. Think people and process changes and technology implementations and getting people like. And so over time, as you build it, it actually gets harder and harder to unwind it. And so while sure, like in an idealistic setting, build it right the first time makes sense, most companies do not feel the pain like this until they're 50, 100, 200 million in recurring revenue, where the machine that was scalable in 2021 is no longer scalable. And it creates pressure on burn, it creates pressure on valuations, rule of 40, combination of profitability and growth that executives will need to solve. If you're a company that isn't growing fast and isn't profitable as a SaaS company today, you're basically worthless, even though you're a $50 million company. Discounted cash flow models would yield those companies effectively worthless. And so people will need to be able to figure out how to spend more efficiently on sales and marketing to improve EBITDA and gross margin to be able to hit those types of financial profiles.
Right. I got you. Yeah. I think probably what I meant more was start at the top rather than start at the beginning. I didn't mean go back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Of
yeah.
Business.
I just love clarifying because you like get me on little talk tracks.
Yeah. Starting, I mean, I mean, start at the top, which is the first point of engagement. Actually, how do they want to engage with your business? How do they want to engage with you? And on what basis? The when as well. But, you know, obviously, you know, when you're talking about these older organizations that you said that you've been kind of enjoyed engaging with, you know, there's a lot more data, there's a lot more mess there, right, in legacy businesses and legacy systems and legacy brands. And just navigating that, do you find, like, in terms of the type of people that you need to engage as stakeholders, is there a particular successful matrix that you identified as part of that process? And we deal with, obviously, with large scale organizations. Some of them are quite traditional. And obviously, they have a lot of people doing a lot of work there. When we have companies that have, you know, they have their chief data officer and they have their CIO, and then they have, you know, their chief revenue officer, chief commercial officer, depending on the structure. And then you have a data and insights team that comes somewhere over here between marketing and data. It can be difficult to navigate. And so even internally, for those people to actually understand what it is that someone like you wants to get out of, how do you map to these types of organizations? Is there an exercise you go through, an understanding that you have that you're going to have to be very honest with you? Again, I'm going back to process here, but you know, a lot of the people that we talk to are starting on a journey, and they are in those kind of mid-cap organizations. So people that goes all the way up from kind of the 50 million annual revenues up to the kind of $64 billion in billings in our largest client.
Yeah, there are organizational complexities and things like that. The thing that has worked for us so far is that a sales leader or marketing leader that deploys tens of millions of dollars in investments every year is looking for someone to come in and look at the data and be able to deploy those investments more effectively, and then also be able to fix the data coming through. And oftentimes, you don't need approval from the chief data officer to review the data that already exists to be able to optimize within your function. And so that's generally how it works. Do I have a vision about how CFOs and chief data officers and CIOs should care about what we're doing? Sure, but it's not practical right now. And so we spend a lot of time with go-to-market leaders optimizing go-to-market investments. If we get hired by the CMO, it doesn't mean that we're not going to look at the SDR investments if they don't sit under there. It doesn't mean that we're not going to look at the tech that runs across the whole go-to-market. It doesn't mean that we're not going to look at expansion revenue. But that is the way that you're able to navigate inside of a big organization right now, is to narrow the scope of what you're doing into a, you know, single or two stakeholders at most generally. Sure, there's a business model to go in and try and sell a $10 million three-year contract to a company like that. That's just not the approach that we're taking right now.
Understood. Well, look, I really appreciate your time. We've got 5 minutes, but I think I'll give you your 5 minutes back.
Cool.
And I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us today. Thanks so much, Chris.
Yeah, awesome for having me. Thank you, everyone. Now I got 5 minutes before I do the next one.
Right. That's, I figured I'd give you some time back.
Thanks so much. Good to see you.
Thanks, Chris. Take care. Bye.